Lee Edwards is the distinguished fellow in conservative thought at the Heritage Foundation and is widely regarded as the historian of the conservative movement, having written biographies of Ronald Reagan and Barry Goldwater. He also serves as adjunct professor of politics at the Catholic University of America and is chairman of the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. Lee received his bachelor's degree from Duke University and his PhD in world politics from the Catholic University. Lee?
Well, thank you, Victoria, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. And we're getting almost to the point, I think, where we can get a chance to hear what you have to say and think. I'm sure we'll do our best to answer your questions. Since the essence of conservatism is to apply the wisdom, experience, and revealed truths of the past to the problems of today, I thought it would be helpful for our discussion this morning to consider the wisdom and experience of four prominent conservatives in the field of U.S. foreign policy. And the members of this illustrious quartet are Walter Judd, Robert A. Taft, Barry Goldwater, and Ronald Reagan. Dr. Judd was one of the most influential members of the U.S. House of Representatives for 20 years, particularly in the conduct of our foreign policy. At the beginning of the Cold War, Dr. Judd took the House floor to argue that America had four choices in global affairs as she considered the next half century. First, he said, we can try to go back critical air bases, main routes of trade, and then building such a giant air force and navy and army that it will be certain that no nation can ever attack us. But, Dr. Judd said, not even America has the necessary resources to go it alone. And if we tried to police the world single-handed, the rest of the world would gang up on us. Imperialism, he said, was always immoral. For America to try it now would be suicidal. Third, we could adopt a philosophy of WPA-ism, where America would try to buy the world's goodwill. But giving people things instead of helping them to get on their feet so they can develop their own freedom from want is always self-defeating in the long run. Such an approach, the former medical missionary said, destroys independence, will, initiative, and self-reliance. Fourth, America could participate in a genuinely cooperative effort with our allies to achieve an organized security. Referring to World War II, he said, the world could not stand these periodic returns to the jungle. Surely, he said, if we could work with our allies to win the war, we are sufficiently intelligent and wise to work out with our allies ways by which we can jointly win the peace. Senator Robert A. Taft of Ohio, invariably described and referred to several times here this morning, invariably described as Mr. Republican, was a legislative giant of the Republican Party from the late 1930s to 1953 when he died at too early an age of cancer. Best known for his principled approach to taxes and budgets, other domestic issues, Taft was drawn into foreign policy because of the Cold War and his 1952 pursuit of the Republican presidential nomination. Taft was not an isolationist. He called himself a non-interventionist. He opposed America's entry into World War II because he perceived war as the enemy of limited government. He insisted that every avenue must be explored before resorting to military action. But he did favor alliances. He supported the League of Nations and the UN Charter. And because of communism's clear and present danger, he voted for the Truman Doctrine and the Marshall Plan. He opposed NATO because it committed the U.S. to a military alliance when we were not formally at war. But he was later willing to arm the governments of Western Europe if they should desire armaments, and he argued that the U.S. should pay more attention to the mounting challenges of Asia. My view, Senator Taft said in 1951, is that American foreign policy should be directed primarily to the protection of the liberty of the people of the United States. The war should be undertaken only when necessary to protect that liberty. Went on to say, because of the power of Soviet Russia and the communist philosophy, that is to say, ideology, we must today do everything possible to prevent the extension of that power as a threat to our security. Third, the delicate balance that ideally exists between freedom and order, Barry Goldwater wrote in The Conscience of a Conservative, published in 1960 at the height of the Cold War, has long since tipped against freedom practically everywhere on earth. For the American conservative, therefore, he said, there is no difficulty in identifying the day's overriding political challenge. It is to preserve and extend freedom, not only in America, but around the world. Senator Goldwater devoted one-third of his best-selling political manifesto to the Soviet menace, which he said had to be confronted. We have fought and sought settlements, he said, while the communists have sought victories. Our objective must be not to wage a struggle against communism, but to win it. Four, building on Goldwater's why not victory philosophy, President Ronald Reagan pursued a multi-track national security strategy. He confidently proclaimed in 1982, quote, that the march of freedom and democracy, will leave Marxism-Leninism on the ash heap of history. And he instructed his national security team, including one of our panelists here this morning, to develop a plan to end the Cold War by winning it. Reagan's foreign policy offensive, as we know, included such measures, not military necessarily, as covert support for solidarity in Poland, an increase in pro-freedom public diplomacy, and a drive to hurt the Soviet economy by driving down the price of oil and limiting natural gas imports to the West. Democracy triumphed in the Cold War, Reagan later wrote, because it was a battle of ideas between one system that gave preeminence to the state and another that gave preeminence to the individual and freedom. So, what can we conclude from this brief review of the foreign policy decisions and proposals of four prominent American conservatives? The national interest is paramount and must be protected. The U.S. should intervene around the world only when its vital interests are at stake. Well, what are they? Well, Kim Holmes of the Heritage Foundation defined those interests as protecting American territory, sea lanes, and airspace, preventing a major power from controlling Europe, East Asia, or the Persian Gulf, ensuring U.S. access to world resources, expanding free trade throughout the world, and protecting Americans against threats to their lives and well-being. Promoting American national interests, our colleague Ed Fulner has remarked, is not amoral or selfish, but a moral act required by the Constitution. Well, looking back at the past 50 years, we can see that U.S. foreign policy has been most successful, as in the reconstruction of post-war Western Europe and Japan, and the Persian Gulf War of 1991, when it's walked on two legs, the two legs of idealism and pragmatism. The American people respond to the former, idealism, while the prudent policymaker honors the latter, pragmatism. When the two are in balance, our foreign policy proceeds smoothly and successfully. But if we lean too much in the direction of idealism or pragmatism, our foreign policy begins to tilter, to falter, and will, if not corrected, collapse. President George W. Bush has stated his belief in and commitment to just such a balance in the national security strategy of the United States of America, which Ellis Sandos has referred to, published only last month. President Bush declares that America is at war. The strategy set forth in the 49-page document reflects his administration's most solemn obligation to protect the security of the American people. The path we have chosen, he says, is consistent with the great tradition of American foreign policy. Like the policies of Harry Truman and Ronald Reagan, he says, our approach is idealistic about our national goals and realistic about the means to achieve them. In this national security strategy document, President Bush says, a new totalitarian ideology now threatens us and requires a long-range commitment and strategy similar to those that ended the Cold War. Bush is practicing what I think what can be called prudential internationalism. Prudential internationalism. Act multilaterally when possible and unilaterally when necessary. His actions in Iraq and elsewhere make sense, but only if you accept the basic premise set forth in the first words of his national security strategy. America is at war. If you do not agree that America is at war, then you should add your voice to the swelling chorus of criticism. But if you agree that America is at war, indeed is engaged in a protracted conflict against an enemy as determined, disciplined, and fanatical as the communists were, then I think you should support, in the main, President Bush and his strategy of encouraging freedom and democracy throughout the world. Thank you.